"Have you ever seen God?" She takes her glasses off at this point. "Have you ever seen God?" That is a wild and perhaps very threatening question, arguably from a lunatic stranger with a foreign accent. I know, I'm sure it must feel like here is yet another Brit that Father Andrew has dragged out to preach. This time on low Sunday in the church calendar. Okay, a wild question from a wild stranger, thanks to your wild rector. Friends, I'm honored to be here among you today on this high Sunday, this occasion of Father Andrew's celebration of 25 years of ministry since his ordination to the priesthood, almost half of which he spent here with you at St. Michael and St. George. I'm honored not just to call myself his friend, but now to get to visit St. Michael and St. George, not least because you are a church that has very generously welcomed a number of my precious students from the Anglican Episcopal House of Studies at Duke Divinity School on summer internships. And now you're about to welcome one more of them to come on staff, Emily, after she's ordained later this spring. Oh, joy for me, as I trust for you, to work together for the glory of God and to have so much fun in the process. To work together, as the collect put it, to show forth in our lives what we profess in our faith. To work together, but not simply to be a chaplaincy program for clergy, Lord have mercy. You and I are not here for the sake of Andrew or Emily. Persistent and challenging and inspiring and amusing and persuasive and probably annoying as Father Andrew may be, you ain't seen nothing yet if you haven't seen God. So back to my niggling question. Have you ever seen God? Let me imagine with you for a moment. On the second Sunday of Easter, in the year of our Lord 2012, approximately 2,850 years after King Uzziah died, approximately 2,000 years after Jesus died, exactly 25 years after Father Andrew Archie was ordained, which coincidentally is also exactly 100 years after the Titanic sank. In the same year that Emily Hilden was ordained, I saw the Lord. And what did you see? In the year that King Uzziah died, Isaiah saw the Lord high and lofty, sitting on a throne, and the hem of his robe filled the temple. Seraphs were in attendance above him, and they called one to another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God of hosts. Heaven and earth are full of his glory." In the year that Jesus died, disciple Thomas saw the Lord. Not sitting on a throne, but standing among friends one evening, even though the doors of the house were locked. Far from high and lofty, rather low-key and wounded. I don't know about the hem of his robe filling the building, but I do know about the breath of his spirit filling the room and transforming everything within reach. Here are two very striking and very different accounts of seeing God. I'm guessing if you dared to answer my opening question, have you ever seen God? We might find a whole spectrum of answers from among you, perhaps ranging between these two poles, one of them where God is king, the other where God is servant. One of them where God is so powerfully transcendent, beyond the clouds, the other of them so deeply immanent, present in the nitty-gritty. One of them seated in glory, the other God standing, stooping, bedraggled. One of them on a heavenly throne, high and lofty, the other one in a back room in the roughest part of town, no doubt. One of them surrounded by angels and archangels. The other one, God's hanging out with a bunch of scaredy cats. One of them, let's suppose the background music, Palestrina, 8-part harmony, no sweat. The other, if there was any music, it was coming from the nightclub down the street. Surely one of them, liturgy from the Book of Common Prayer. Right one. Isn't it gratifying that the seraphs follow the Book of Common Prayer? The other, maybe right two, whatever, just the same jaw-dropping awe. One of them, the Sunday morning, the high point of the week, planned, rehearsed. The other, probably Sunday night, after you finish loading the dishwasher, just before you went to bed, when you least expected to see God. Friends, you need to be warned about encountering God. It can happen anywhere, not just when you're ready for it in your Sunday best, but even when you've locked your doors at home. And between those two extremes, you can expect it more normally if you hang out with those in need. You know, the widow, the orphan, the alien. And why do I warn you about encountering God? I warn you because you won't come out of it the same person. The tradition in the Old Testament is that no one could see God and live. Seeing God is so overwhelming that you not only fall flat on your face, prostrate in fear, but your human finitude before the divine infinitude is so overwhelming that you're a goner. It puts things in perspective, so to speak. God's glory is everything, and you're nothing. Remember Moses? At a particularly high moment in his ministry at Mount Sinai, he asked if he could see God's glory. But no one can see me and live, is the reply he gets from God. Not even you, Moses. But God does invite Moses to hide himself in the cleft of a rock to protect himself as God passes over. This is as much as Moses can cope with, to see the divine coattails. And he's satisfied. He's thrilled. With Isaiah, I suspect the circumstances were a little different. I think Isaiah was someone who probably hung out in the temple bearing up the promises and problems of the people of God. The good king has just died, and there's no one decent to take over from him anywhere. When suddenly, one morning, he's taken aback to have a vision that alters his perspective dramatically. The throne isn't empty. God is on the throne. God is king. Stop worrying, Isaiah. Things will go on. Now, Thomas has every bit as much gumption as Moses, arguably without such a strong track record in ministry, however. When he finds out that the rest of the disciples got to see the risen Jesus and he missed out, he's mad. He despairs. It becomes the all-consuming longing and need. not just to see Jesus, but actually to touch Jesus and his wounds. And again, God grants that request. So each of these guys, they have a remarkable experience of seeing God. I dare say the kind of experience the adventurous among us long for, even as we also fear it. But tread carefully, friends. I want to explore with you now what this experience of God did to them. No one is left unchanged. Whatever their concerns and inadequacies were beforehand, these are met. They are transformed. Isaiah's woe is me, sinfulness, is met with the burning coal of forgiveness, following the Old Testament system of confession and absolution. Thomas finds healing in touching Christ's wounds. They both have that aha moment, recognizing who God is and who they are. Who God is and who they are. And they are lost in wonder, love, and praise. I think that's what we call worship. And Isaiah, he acts like a child, giddy with excitement and enthusiasm. When he hears the heavenly voice saying, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" he puts up his hand immediately, desperate for the teacher to pick him. "Please, miss, me, me." Even though he's absolutely no idea why he's got his hand up. What's God going to do with him? And the disciples? Our translation says they rejoiced. That doesn't quite do it. The first Inuit version of the Bible put it much more vividly. The disciples were so glad that they wagged their tails. They are giddy with excitement, and so is God. And at that point, we have the energy, we have the gestalt that means we are ready to send. God sends. God is ever saying, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" But now, Isaiah hears. To the disciples, Jesus says, "As the Father sent me, so I send you." Both of these encounters are in turn stories of commissioning, ordinations, if you like, where God equips and then sends out his servants. Isaiah, he's the prophet who prepares the people for exile. Thomas, he's the disciple who, according to the tradition, plants the church in India. Friends, what we have here is a pattern for the life of faith. Encounter, transformation, worship, service. And this pattern is not just in the pages of the Bible. I think, I dare say, it's the pattern we all recognize in Andrew. And it's probably the reason he is such an inspiration to us. It's the same pattern I see in Emily and in the scores of young hopefuls I teach, like her, who are giving their lives to God and, yes, to the Episcopal Church. God has caused them to rejoice. He has set their tails wagging. And when that happens, you simply have to let them off the leash and watch them run. But this is not just a pattern for the clergy. It's not just a pattern for prophets, apostles, and priests. It is, I dare to tell you, the normal pattern for us all. Sure, Isaiah and Thomas have dramatic stories to tell. Here are a couple of case studies. Who says Harvard Business School invented that approach? I doubt Andrew has a story to match theirs, though it is perfectly possible. Yet, I put it to you, there is no way he would be here 25 years on if in the day-to-day living of life he did not seek those divine encounters and God's ongoing transformation and keep offering himself in service. In some ways, the beauty of today's celebration has little to do with God's initial call to Andrew and everything to do with the fact that Andrew has continued in that call. It's a bit like a marriage. Getting married is usually the easy bit. Keeping going through thick and thin is what is really remarkable. Friends, family, parishioners of Father Andrew, how do you mark his silver jubilee in ministry? How do you respond? How do you celebrate? A priest's ministry involves constantly making tangible God's presence, creating the opportunities where the people of God may encounter the living God and be transformed. In preaching the word, in placing the sacrament into your hands, in urging you to feed the hungry or visit the sick or serve those in prison or give up your pocketbooks. Andrew is not here for you to encounter him and enjoy him, but to help you to encounter Jesus. It's Jesus who transforms, not Andrew. I suggest you celebrate by opening up your lives once again, this morning, tomorrow morning, every day, to God's encounter, inviting God's work of transformation and responding to the call to go, to be sent. I say that as a wild stranger from far away, having absolutely no idea what will happen here at the Church of St. Michael and St. George, except that your tails will wag and the church will blossom and God will be glorified and you will have no regrets. I dare you.